tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 16th of July 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, which means it's Geopolitical Analysis Day and we have our resident geopolitical analyst with us, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rusjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. And in fact, we're going to talk about Turkey. I have a Turkish Angora here. I don't know if you're going to hear her. You might hear her because she's deaf and she doesn't know how loud she is. So if you hear a cat meow, that's her. She may have a strong opinion on this stuff. I don't know.
Well, I will keep an ear out for her. We don't often hear your cats, hear your animals. Hopefully we won't today. As you say, we're going to be talking about Turkey today, and that's particularly because we've just had the NATO summit meeting at Ankara. We're going to be talking about the ramifications of that. We've got some Turkish sources, which we're going to use later on, but the first source that we're going to use comes from globalresearch.ca. And in fact, just before that, we have a quote from section 2 of the Ankara summit, and this took place amidst major protests in the street, and the direct quote is, "To counter the long-term threat Russia poses to Euro-Atlantic security and stability and the persistent threat of terrorism, allies are delivering on the Hague defence commitment. In 2025, European allies and Canada increased their investments in core defence requirements by more than $139 billion. So they're effectively saying that that's as a direct result of the threat that Russia poses to Europe, they've had to increase their funding by $139 billion. Is that the reason why you wanted to read this quote out, Matt?
Yeah, that's exactly why. I don't think Turkey necessarily buys it. The president there is very, very adroit at playing both sides. But Turkey by itself is a strong nation. And there's a big, huge debate out there whether they're going to stay in NATO or not. That's one of the most important issues. If they leave NATO, that may shatter the entire alliance.
Well, that's what it seems to be saying here. Turkey, yeah, and you've put, I refuse to use the term Turkey yet because it's stupid, and it is rather stupid. It's like, you know, Turkey said they wanted to change the name to Turkey, yeah, fair enough. If they want to call themselves Turkey, yeah, that's absolutely fine, but we shouldn't change. You know, Germany calls itself Deutschland, but we don't refer to it as Deutschland, do we? We refer to it as Germany. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the reason why I would say Turkey, not Turkey, yeah. It's, you know, they haven't changed what our word for Turkey is because they haven't got the right to do that. It's our English word for Turkey.
Yeah, it's been Turkey my whole life. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm going to keep using it.
Yeah, well, Turkey hosted the NATO summit on July 7th to the 8th at one of the most consequential moments in NATO's modern history, with member states facing mounting pressure to increase defence spending, strengthen military capabilities, and redefine the alliance's strategic priorities amidst escalating geopolitical tensions. Many analysts said the summit exposed the deep fractures within the members of NATO, with the alliance seemingly unaligned on many issues. Each member of NATO is pulling in separate directions. Turkey is hoping to emerge as one of the alliance's most influential strategic actors. But this has been met with Israeli concern that their position as the region's premier US ally may be threatened. Well, I mean, recently it was Israel that was actually threatening Turkey and saying that Turkey was going to turn to the next Iran and next Israel was going to have to go after Turkey. I mean, how beneficial really is Israel there if it was weighed up against Turkey? I would have thought that actually Turkey is militarily more important to the United States than Israel. But it's an interesting dynamic to have the two of them going against one another like this. What are your thoughts, Matt?
Oh, well, you know, the Turkish military is far larger and far superior to what's left of the Israeli one. We spoke about, you know, over the years, the desertion of the IDF, the heavy casualties they're taking. They're fighting now on at least two or three fronts. Can you imagine this one? And the fact of the matter is, because of the Gaza genocide, Turkish voters said, unless you do something, we're going to vote you out. And the ruling party did lose a few years ago in what we would call midterm elections. And so they had to start talking about it for the first time. They were usually pretty neutral about the issue, but no more. And, you know, Turkey is a militarily, you know, it's almost a militarized society. And, you know, Israel doesn't have the capacity to defeat them at any level.
Well, one of the summit's most closely watched developments was President Donald Trump's meeting with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Trump described Turkey as a great ally and stated that U.S.-Turkish relations are now better than ever. He announced that Washington is considering approving the sale of F-35 fifth-generation fighter aircraft to Turkey and indicated he had no concerns regarding Ankara's acquisition of the advanced aircraft. The Trump administration is preparing to reintegrate Turkey into the F-35 program after its suspension in 2019 following Ankara's purchase of the Russian S-400 air defense system. And we did a podcast about this at that time, saying what was going to happen because Russia is going to be, it can't be integrated with, Turkey can't be integrated with Russia, as well as being integrated with NATO. So it seems that they suspended this purchase, but now they're willing to do it again. I mean, I think it's because they want to keep Turkey in NATO, because surely that is a risk, having Ankara being integrated with Russia as well as with NATO. I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But Trump also praised Turkey's role during the recent conflict involving Iran, describing Ankara as a valuable partner that contributed to diplomatic efforts aimed at ending hostilities and preventing Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is strongly opposed to the potential sale of F-35 aircraft to Turkey. Netanyahu argued that such a deal would destroy the balance of power in the Middle East. Erdogan's stance in support of the Palestinian people and against the genocidal policies of Israel has caused some Israeli politicians to call Turkey the new Iran. And I'm quite surprised at this, because I would have thought that Donald Trump would have been saying, we're not going to give you these F-35 aircraft all the while that you are integrated with Russian air defense systems. So it really doesn't make a lot of sense to me. What do you make of this, Matt?
Yeah, we spoke of this at the time. We said that, you know, when you buy a weapon system, and it was a lot more than just that, not just the S-400, it was several others, they are superior on the battlefield, as has been proven in the Ukraine war. And it's also a way to, you know, keep the two powers, you know, making better deals. The F-35 is a way to bribe them, almost. So you have the Israeli pressure on the one hand, then you have the pressure of keeping Turkey in NATO. Turkey doesn't need NATO, but NATO needs Turkey.
NATO describes itself as a defensive organization. However, historically, it has always been an offensive organization. The US-NATO attack on Yugoslavia, Iraq, Libya, Yemen, and Syria were carried out on orders from Washington and enriching the Western military-industrial complex. Turkey played a major role in the US-NATO invasion and attack on Syria for regime change by hosting the mercenaries used to fight the Syrian people. The European members of NATO recall that it was Turkey who opened the floodgates of migrants from Syria to Europe in the beginning of 2015, which has destabilized Europe and drained it of funds. And I really hadn't thought of that before. I mean, you'd think, well, hang on a minute. I mean, Turkey's going against Syria. That's one Muslim country going against another Muslim country. Why would they want to do that? But in actual fact, they managed to turn it against the Christian West by opening up the floodgates and pushing all these Syrian refugees into Europe. So, I mean, because I was thinking, well, why has Turkey done this? Well, effectively, I mean, it could well be that they're just sort of making up for the fact that they were attacking Syria. I really hadn't thought of it in this way before. Matt, have you thought about that before?
I have, but I tend to blame the NGOs and the multinationals for bringing these people. And they're not Syrians. You know, more recently, they've been from Africa. I remember there was a quote from Gaddafi years ago that he was the only thing protecting Europe from, you know, essentially a mass migration invasion. But, you know, there's been conflict in the Middle East forever. And never has it resulted in this massive influx of migrants. So I do think Western liberal NGOs, Jewish organizations, they've admitted that themselves. Or as much to blame as any policy of Turkey or anyone else.
I can remember Turkey saying, "We've got 5 million of them here, or whatever." And they did it. They say we're opening the gates. So I forget what it was over. It might have been that they wanted to join the EU, or they wanted visas.
Yeah,
they wanted something in return for not doing it, and they didn't get what they wanted, and that was it. There was just floods of refugees came across from Turkey.
I think it had something to do with bringing the rest of the Nordic countries in, and Turkey still left out. For some reason, they want to be a part of it, even though they realize it's a terrible thing to be a part of the EU. I don't think it's that big of a deal anymore. They act like it's a big deal. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was the issue. But the migrants were coming from everywhere. And despite the fact that, you know, Turkey is a first world state, industrialized country, it certainly couldn't afford to house millions and millions of refugees, unless, of course, it was the UN or some other organization that was doing it. But, you know, no matter what the Turkish point of view was of the West or of the EU, this has never happened before. Not at this level, anyway.
Yeah, we've had wars in the Middle East before, and yet we didn't have loads of people flooding in. So there certainly was something different. Perhaps it was the NGOs this time. But I mean, there's always been NGOs. There's always been Jewish advocates of open borders. And I think the big difference here was Erdogan. Maybe he said, yes, I'll let you bomb Syria, but we're not taking the refugees. And then he's opened the gates and pushed them into Europe. NATO was founded in Washington on April 4th, 1949, by 12 member states based on the principle of collective defence established under Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty, which declares that an attack against one member is considered an attack against all. Inkerlik Air Base began operations in February 1955, and it evolved into one of NATO's most strategically important military facilities, supporting operations across the Middle East. Although Turkey has experienced numerous disagreements with several NATO allies over regional conflicts, defence procurement, and foreign policy, it has consistently maintained a central role within the alliance. Its strategic geography, bridging Europe, the Middle East, the Black Sea, and the Caucasus, combined with the alliance's second largest military force after the United States, has made Turkey indispensable to NATO's southern flank. Today, Turkey seeks not merely to remain a NATO member, but to help shape the alliance's future security architecture while promoting its rapidly expanding domestic defense industry. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, formerly Prime Minister of the Netherlands, argues that Europe must assume greater responsibility for its own security while maintaining NATO's transatlantic character. Under the new framework, member states have committed to increasing defence expenditures to 5% of GDP by 2035. Rutte emphasised that financial commitments alone are insufficient, stressing that increased spending must translate into deployable military capabilities, stronger defence industries, and accelerated production of advanced weapons systems. This position reflects Donald Trump's criticism of NATO and past threats to pull the US out of the organization. Turkey's defense sector has undergone remarkable expansion in recent years, with military exports exceeding $10 billion last year. Turkish manufacturers now produce a wide range of defense systems, including drones, artillery munitions, armored vehicles, and electronic warfare technologies, often delivering products faster and at lower cost than many Western competitors. But it would seem as if NATO doesn't want this, because they're saying that it has to retain its transatlantic character. And I would have thought that meant Europe and America rather than Middle Eastern character in defence here. And also what he's saying is it's no good you spending 5% of GDP if that goes on inflated prices and we don't actually see much weaponry. We need to see the weaponry. And maybe that could be even like a backhanded dig at the amount of money that goes on the private arms industry for not very much that comes back from it. As you've talked about quite a lot of times, Matt, haven't you? How much it costs America to create its weaponry is vastly inflated for what they actually get. Do you think Mark Rutte is referring to that there? And also, do you think he could be referring to not actually wanting to buy Turkey's weaponry when he says that NATO has to retain its transatlantic flavor?
Well, the concept of a military alliance like this is that the different armies in different countries have to be completely interchangeable. They have to use the same weaponry, the same methods of training. You know, there can't be a German version or a French version and a Turkish version. Turkey, of course, has fallen out of that by buying Russian equipment, which is superior to the. And the fact is that the Ukrainian battlefield has proven that the American products and the German products and Swedish products were vaporized on the battlefield. They're terrible. You know, we talk about German engineering, and yet the Leopard 2 tank, very few of them are operational. You know, where the other, so that went out the window. But Turkey would be a central figure in Middle Eastern politics, whether they were part of NATO or not. But the pressures to leave it come, of course, from the Gaza genocide and the fact that regardless of what they, you know, Trump might say, Turkish relations with Iran have been generally positive. Their trade has been extraordinary. Starting from 2000, it's gone way up. Turkey is investing in Iranian gas fields. Now, that was in 2010. I know it's a little bit dated, but Iran produces maybe 30 or 40% of Turkey's need of natural gas. They disagree on a few issues. That's true. But they both hate the Kurds like everyone does. However, if Donald Trump were to pull out of the organization, if the U.S. were to leave NATO, there would be no NATO. We know that. And the Europeans would have to create something, their own, system. Spain, of course, seems to be out of the alliance. They're not cooperating with anybody. And as you well know, France was dropped out of NATO for what, 40 years, 43 years? So it's not like it hasn't been done before. Rutte is also talking about things like having the manpower and the proper equipment, which they simply don't have, and they don't have the economy for it. They don't have the methods for it. The Ukraine battlefield has proven so much about the Western military systems capacities that it's humiliated NATO. And that's a huge part of my book on the topic. Because it's on the air as well as on the ground. So Turkey is interested in Russian products just because they're better. Not just send a statement or send a message. And also keep in mind, these are state-owned companies. So they're not for profit. So of course they're going to be less expensive. Same thing for Russia. Same thing for China. These are owned by defense production systems are owned by the military. These are not private firms that outsource to other places. These are purely Turkish companies that have maybe even outproduced the West. But if they're gonna stay in NATO, it has to be perfectly interchangeable with every other system that other NATO countries use.
Does that mean that they have to purchase all the same weaponry, or do they have this is the plan for this weapon, here are the blueprints, you manufacture it in your factory over there, we'll manufacture it in our factory over here? Does it work like that, or are the NATO countries required to purchase certain types of equipment from America, do you know?
Oh, whether they're required to purchase it? Most NATO countries have their own military industrial complex. But usually they don't produce enough for any kind of long scale, full scale war. But it's not supposed to matter. They're supposed to be more or less, they're supposed to be interchangeable. They may look different and act, but they're supposed to be totally interchangeable systems. And the methods of trying to use these systems, whether it be, a tank, be something like air defense, missile defense. They're supposed to be totally the methods of training to use these things have to be the same. So despite different languages, they're supposed to be one body. But we all know that for a lot of reasons, that's simply not the case anymore. And when Ankara, we talked about this, and it was more than just that one system, which has proven to be far in a way the best one in terms of missile defense. It was many other things. And that creates a relationship. Because you need, spare parts and ammunition. And they're buying that from Russia. They still are. That's a fact. And they watch the Ukraine war. They watched it very carefully. And they've seen which systems have done the best.
Keir Starmer resigned today. And one of the points he was making in his resignation speech, he's doing something to do with Ukraine, and he was talking about how Ukraine is indispensable to Europe because militarily it's indispensable, because it stood up against Russia, because it has all this amazing military technology that it has developed in fighting against Russia. So what you're saying about Russia's technology, Keir Starmer is saying about Ukraine's technology today, and yet Ukraine's technology, as far as I'm aware, it all just comes from NATO. And France has given Keir Starmer the highest award France can actually give to anyone who's not French for services to Ukraine. It's yeah, quite incredible. Anyway, as far as I'm aware, the only reason why Russia hasn't completely destroyed Ukraine is because it's holding back. Ukraine hasn't developed some amazing technologies for fighting against Russia. Anyway, getting back to this. The Ankara summit also showcased NATO's growing investment in defence modernisation. Diplomats confirmed that new defence contracts announced during the summit exceeded $50 billion. Major agreements were signed involving Canada, Germany, Sweden, France, UK and Poland. So $50 billion. So it does look as if they're getting these contracts. They are contracting to America to buy certain types of weaponry. I mean, it has to be. That's why they're saying this, I think. American and Turkish observers increasingly agree that Turkey has undergone a transformation within NATO. Once frequently portrayed as the alliance's most controversial member, Ankara is now widely viewed as one of its most indispensable strategic partners. Turkey controls access to the Black Sea, commands NATO's second largest military, possesses a rapidly expanding defence industry, and occupies a pivotal geographic position connecting Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. The Ankara summit may ultimately be remembered not simply as another NATO meeting, but as the one in which Turkey plays a leading role in shaping NATO's future. However, NATO's future remains uncertain due to the lack of unity among its members, and also a lack of support for Turkey in actually being a member of NATO. We're going to use some of our Turkish sources now, and this is an earlier one. This is from 3 years ago. Turkey may exit NATO in 5 to 6 months amidst provocative actions against Ankara, deputy leader of the Patriotic Party, Vatan Partisi, Ethem Sancak, said on Wednesday. The developments have prompted us to take such steps. NATO is making us do so with its provocations. They have been seeking to contrast us to our neighbour, Iran. Turkey will leave NATO in 5 to 6 months. They have been trying to get us caught in the Middle East crossfire. Finally, you can see campaigns against the Quran in Sweden and the Netherlands, the Idyllic newspaper quoted him as saying. And for a while there, Turkey was not going to allow Sweden to join NATO because of the burning of the Quran in Sweden. I think that all got smoothed over. I think they were also demanding some political dissidents were returned from Sweden to Turkey, but that has certainly been smoothed over now. Sancak referred to recent polls showing that at least 80% of the Turkish population believe that the United States is a country running the most hostile and destructive policy towards the Republic. That's the Turkish Republic. The Turkish people have lately been showing sympathy for Russia and Putin, the politician concluded. Meanwhile, on January 19th, Turkey's Patriotic Party announced the launch of a nationwide campaign urging the Republic's leadership to leave the North Atlantic Alliance. Previously, the anti-American party repeatedly called on Ankara to close US military bases on Turkish territory, revoke the F-16 purchase contract, and withdraw from NATO. So that was 3 years ago, Matt, and they've still got protests taking place outside Ankara, outside this summit. So what is the current state of play with this, general public opinion?
Yeah, I think general public opinion has gotten, if it was 80 then, it's higher now because of the U.S. trying to, Turkey has not assisted the U.S. here. When Turkey put full sanctions on Israel, where trade went down to zero. Well, who made it up? Iran, Azerbaijan made it up. Being dragged into this absolutely needless conflict that now the U.S. has lost badly, no matter what Trump might say. How could it possibly be a popular option? Patriotic Party is a major party there, and there's a very good chance that in the near future it would take over. When it does, they're going to try to pull Turkey out of NATO, just like de Gaulle did many years ago.
I'm not sure that would work, though. I mean, as you can see, Trump's already now selling these weapons that they sort of banned Turkey from having. So they must realize how important Turkey is to them. And I guess that's a bargaining chip that they can use, really, is allowing Turkey to still remember a part of NATO. Well, next up, we have some more recent quotes from Turkish news. Turkey plays a crucial role in NATO's defense strategy. Its departure would significantly alter the alliance's military and geopolitical landscape. Key implications for NATO include loss of strategic geography. NATO would lose access to critical military bases near conflict zones, weakening its influence in the Middle East and the Black Sea region. So not just close to the Middle East, but also close to Ukraine and what's going on there. Weakened southern flank. Turkey's absence would leave NATO's southeastern flank vulnerable, potentially emboldening regional adversaries. Operational challenges. Many NATO missions depend on Turkish infrastructure, making operations in Syria, Iraq, and the Mediterranean more complex. Well, they seem to have wrapped up their operations in Syria at the moment, but they still have their ongoing ones in Iran. A NATO without Turkey would shift global security dynamics, affecting multiple international stakeholders. Possible global outcomes include a stronger Russia and China influence. Turkey's pivot away from NATO could bring it closer to Russia and China, altering power balances in Eurasia. Middle East instability. Turkey's departure might affect conflicts in Syria and Iraq, reducing NATO's ability to counter terrorism and regional threats. European defence adjustments. EU nations might have to increase defence spending and military readiness to compensate for Turkey's exit. If Turkey left NATO, it would need to redefine its alliances and security policies, and the key factors for Turkey include closer ties with Russia. Turkey could deepen defence cooperation with Russia, possibly expanding its S-400 missile defence programme. Increased role in regional alliances. Turkey may strengthen ties with organisations like the Shanghai Cooperation Organisation or the Organisation of Turkic States. Independent military strategy. Without NATO, Turkey might expand its domestic defence industry and pursue a more autonomous military approach. Turkey's departure from NATO would reshape global security, impacting NATO's strategic positioning, regional stability, and international power dynamics. While NATO would face new challenges, Turkey would also need to carefully navigate its redefined alliances and security policies. This scenario remains hypothetical, but its consequences would be far-reaching. But it seems to me that it would benefit Turkey to leave NATO. And it also seems that Turkey is absolutely essential to NATO for where it is, effectively, right there by the Middle East and also right there by Ukraine. So what is in this deal for Turkey? What does Turkey get out of being a part of NATO when it's on friendly terms with Russia? And basically NATO just seems to be a stick to beat Russia with, and Turkey doesn't have any fears from Russia. So what is Turkey actually getting out of being a part of NATO, Matt, do you know?
Well, I don't think they really need to be. Before you went away, we had more than one, actually several, podcasts talking about the Turkish tilt towards Russia in terms of equipment and everything else. Whatever secrets that NATO has will be known by Russia and China in that case. NATO is the one that gains from Turkish presence, not the other way around. And already, you know, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is the Russo-Chinese security organization, Turkey is an observing member. And they even were thinking about BRICS at one point. So they would have to, the U.S. would have to shift probably, I guess, to Saudi Arabia or just rely on air radar systems. The Incirlik base has been absolutely essential. But Turkey only occasionally lets the, you know, permits the U.S. to use their airspace at all. And that's certainly not in the Israeli situation. And this is seen as an Israeli war against Iran. Now that the U.S. has clearly lost this war, is out of ammunition, is just humiliated before the world, they're getting nothing from NATO except the ability to play one side against another. But there may come a time, you know, Erdogan's not going to be there forever. If a member of the Patriotic Party comes in, there's a few parties like that that don't like NATO. I think, you know, if you're pro-NATO in Turkey excessively, you're not going to do well in the polls. Certainly if you're pro-Israel. And this is the first time I ever remember Turkey even mattering. They were so neutral on the Israel-Palestinian question. It never even occurred to me, except for now, because the Gaza slaughter was so well documented and it was so blatant. And the fact that they place sanctions on Israel was, you know, so here's what maybe a future president was going to have to deal with. Turkey's going to say, we're leaving NATO. President's going to say, okay, what's it going to take for you to stay? you know, we want all the secrets, like the F-35, things like that. And then the Israelis are going to say, no, we don't like the Turks anymore. And which side of that is going to win? You know, either the U.S. is whether NATO really falls apart or Israel gets what it wants. That's the choice that maybe Trump or a future president is going to have to make. And I'm dying to see that happen.
Well, I think they understand that. I think Trump understands that. I think that's why he's made this offer of these, F-600 air fighters, whatever it is, that Turkey was not allowed to have. I think that's why he's offered them to them now and said, we'll give you these. I mean, that's like a sweetheart deal, isn't it? He understands how important Turkey is to NATO. And it's absolutely essential that it stays there. So he's got to start doing things to please Turkey. And that has to be why Erdogan hasn't pulled out. So I would say by Erdogan staying in there, you know, he's shown that was the right move to make, because Trump, he's now best buddies with Trump, and Trump's doing all he can to keep them in there, despite these protests that are going on outside. So,
right, I mean, despite the protests and despite Israeli complaints, that's a big deal.
Yeah, so he's standing up against that and Israel. And what do the general public think about Erdogan's stance on Israel and Palestine? You're saying that he's put sanctions on Israel. I mean, what do these sanctions involve?
Well, trade went to zero as of a few years ago. I think they're still in place, or if it, you know, it's very minor. And that's where the, you know, Turkey is a new Iran kind of thing came from. Turkey and Iran has been more friendly than anything else in years past. You know, their trade and everything else, mutual investment, has been extraordinary. And they're not going to change that. They're not going to alter, you know, these huge investments, whether it be energy or computers or military equipment, whatever they're doing. But initially, it was 2024. The initial sanctions that Turkey put on Israel were 54 product groups, like aluminum wires, cement, sulfur, ceramics, fertilizers, this kind of thing. But then very soon after that, the population made it very clear that unless you just stop trade entirely, you're not going to be president anymore. And that's the first time NATO has ever just come out totally against Israel. Now, of course, Israel's been doing this kind of thing, you know, to the Palestinians for many, many years. But this time it's so blatant, and it went to the ICC. South Africans will get to the ICC. There's no denying it anymore. And now the other issue is the military. Military coups in recent past have been based on returning to secularization. Military is a secular institution. So there may be a battle between Islamist politicians and secular military. And usually, I guess, over the last 30, 40 years, they've had a few of them. And that's the main complaint of the army. You know, they're besmirching the memory of Ataturk. You know, now, whether that's still the case, I don't know, but I think it is. So that's a whole separate issue now in domestic Turkish politics. And the army itself has to be bought off by the state.
Well, what about this planned coup that took place a while back? And I guess the instigator is still in America, isn't he? I mean, has there been any more to do with that? And would they be supportive of NATO or not, you know?
Well, that little coup, it was an attempt. It didn't go anywhere. Why I can't remember his name. He's just not. He's a couple of counties away from me here in Pennsylvania. He died last year, I think. But he has students all over the place. very, very, you know, Islamic conception of Turkey. One of the reasons that that coup took place, at least one of their complaints, was that he was too influential. So, whether or not they could, you know, the Turkish state and the Turkish army can smooth over that issue, I don't know. But you know, Turkey has a long history of military coups. Now, when that coup had no chance. There was a handful of it was a terrible. Whoever planned that should be fired, and then was. He completely purged the army. And he didn't stop there. He purged university professors. He purged anything he could purge to bring these institutions closer to him. So maybe that's not an issue anymore. I don't know in detail, of course, but by purging it, people had to replace it. People had to be brought in to replace. And I think that may even be all the worse for NATO. That's probably the greatest purge in Turkish history, even going back to the Ottomans, was after that. I forget the year. We talked about it a little bit. However, it was the Russians that warned him that this was coming. And that created a huge amount of capital between Turkey and Russia. Of course, the U.S. knew about it. They denied it. But it was only the Russians that, you know, Russian intelligence who it's one of the reasons that it didn't go anywhere. So, oh, Russia has our back kind of thing. So, so now, of course, that was a long time ago. I forget exactly when that was. It was a while ago. But you know, even buying Turkey off in the face of Israeli complaints, you still have voters to worry about. And if the army has been kind of Islamized, then he has no worries there. If anything, in the future, there may be a coup in that he's too secular. There may be a coup coming that just pulls out of NATO entirely. So, you know, those purges are still the ripples of that are still being felt. I mean, he went everywhere. Every institution you could think of that the state had any control over, he completely purged and replaced these guys with his people. And so it was all in chaos for a couple of years. So he has a very strong network, so to speak, in Turkey itself. So he's not just a president. He has roots. He has, you know, he has a network is probably the best metaphor. So, but given the fact that, you know, NATO's been humiliated yet again, two lost wars. Well, I consider this one war against Iran. They're getting absolutely nothing from it. And I'm not sure what the U.S. has to offer, because the Russians have far superior systems anyway. And anti-American politicians there, which are, you know, by the ton, are almost automatically pro-Russian or pro-Chinese or both. That's where the economic future is. And that's why they're part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So, yeah, you know, Trump could say we're wonderful allies. But I think NATO is possibly coming to its terminal phase.
Well, I think it would be if Turkey pulled out. You know, after that failed coup, and it was Putin that warned him about it, he's obviously in Putin's debt for that. He knows he hasn't got any problem with Russia. So why does he bother with being a part of NATO? He must be getting paid off in some way, because he doesn't need NATO. Like these countries that joined NATO, they all said, oh, we need to join NATO because of the threat of Russia. Well, Turkey knows that Russia is no threat to them because Russia warned them about this coup. So I'm surprised that he's actually still there in NATO after that. Because on the face of it, there's no need for him to be a part of NATO, is there? Unless he's getting paid off in some way.
There is none. And I don't know what the payment is. Because F-35, fine. you know, the Russians and the Chinese have superior versions of the fifth generation fighters. Several versions of them, in fact. So, and he could see in real time how, you know, the Iranians, using both Russian equipment and Chinese coordinates, you know, there's been several ships really in the Indian Ocean that have been feeding coordinates to the Iranian Ministry of Defense, have knocked out, I don't know how many ships now, and have downed 40, 50 planes of various types. The U.S. won't admit that. They come up with stupid arguments like, oh, no, there was a fire in the engine room or something idiotic, anything but to say that it was Iran. But that's exactly what it was, driving the American ships away from anywhere near Iranian waters, and including an aircraft carrier. So there's nothing that the U.S. doesn't have any money. There's really nothing. There's really nothing NATO has to offer right now. And especially where Israel's concerned, now Turkey is almost on a war footing with Israel, almost. So what's Congress going to do then? You know, so there's so many issues here where I really do think that the Turkish membership in NATO is going to end.
Well, I think you could be right. I mean, there doesn't really seem to be much reason for them being a part of it at all. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that, as we have done over the years. As I mentioned before, we talked about this coup. I mean, we've been following what's happening in Turkey now for quite some years, and I imagine we will continue to do so. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless, and hail victory.